Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm the managing editor of Reader Views, and I'm in Austin, Texas.
And I'm Victor Volkman with Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I'd like to welcome all our listeners to episode number 95 in our series. Tonight's topic is Creating Great Impressions, and our special guest will be Deborah Reynolds. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about tonight's show. Please send them to info@authorsaccess.com. Now, tonight we're on the line with Deborah Reynolds, who is the founder and president of About Face Image Consulting, Incorporated, and she has been in the business for over 19 years. She is a co-author, along with Dr. Wayne Dyer and Tony Robbins, of the newly released bestseller, Wake Up, Live the Life You Love, Living in Clarity, and her own book, Getting You Noticed, Known, and Remembered, Building Your Business Image from the Inside Out, which will be released later this year. Now, Deborah specializes in working with entrepreneurs and executives, helping to redefine, repair, create, and build the image and reputation of individuals and companies, giving them a competitive edge in the marketplace so that they will be noticed, known, and remembered. Now, Deborah's career includes 15 years in law enforcement before taking an about face. Her service with Correctional Service of Canada included life on the installment plan, working in an all-male federal prison. Her reputation with international law enforcement personnel was gained as a tenacious immigration investigator. Highlights of her law enforcement career were the capture of one of America's most wanted and the second most wanted in Germany. Deborah brings the same passion and drive to her business and is a sought-after international motivational speaker, business consultant, and image expert on such topics as leadership, change management, values and character, team communication, and performance strategies. She says, it's important to create a good first impression, but it's essential to create a great lasting impression. Well, good evening, Deborah.
Well, hello, Victor. How are you this evening?
We are great.
Great to have you. And as I was listening to Victor introducing, my goodness, you've been around and you've come with a lot of background that has taken you to this latest career.
Well, it's been an exciting life, but it's all wrapped up into this business. I've taken my past experience in law enforcement, and oddly enough, I did an about face. I did a 180 and went into the image business. And a lot of people say, well, how did that transition transpire? But really, it came out of a love of being, loving color, loving fashion, wanting to work with makeup. And, of course, the business grew to be able to work with people from the inside out, which includes their values, their character, their ethics, the way that they think, confidence, self-esteem. Because you can dress the outside of the person, but if the inside isn't consistent, then you have a problem. So it's all about making everything consistent, very authentic from the inside, and reflected easily on the outside.
You know, Deborah, that is so, so true, because what we are on the inside shows on the outside, and it certainly shows how we wear it on the physical side. Now, on your website, and also Victor just said that you say that it's important to create a first good impression, but it's essential to create a great lasting impression. And I want to first talk about what is the difference between first impression and lasting impression?
Thank you for asking that, Irene, because it is an important topic. When people are really defining image, when we think of image from the inside out, when we look at the dictionary definition, we're talking about an opinion or concept of something, the character that we project to the public, sort of a mental picture, a vivid representation. When we're talking about first impressions, there's an illusion. We've always been told that it's important to make a good first impression. You never get a second chance to make a good first impression. But the interesting thing about that is 98% of the time, when we as individuals form an opinion about somebody else, we're wrong 98% of the time. So in essence, while we judge on that basis of first impressions, we are wrong, and therefore the rest of the relationship is built on that very first introduction, the first conversation, the first handshake, maybe the first email the person sends, the first brochure that's sent out or business card that's passed. And it's unfortunate because what happens is if somebody is not projecting the very best first impression, if there's been a bit of a mishap or a misunderstanding to begin with, what happens is that relationship is built from there forward on that misrepresentation. And we don't get an accurate reflection or accurate understanding of who that person is or what that business is all about. So because we're wrong 98% of the time, I always say forget first impressions. Ignore them. And I want you to move forward in building the relationship with that person or building the relationship with that particular company or business. And then you will have a more accurate understanding of what that business is about, what that person is about when you take the time to talk to them, to listen to them, to find out what their point of view is, their perspective, maybe the culture in that environment. So while we talk about first impressions all the time, it is critical that we do what we can to dress appropriately, speak appropriately, be courteous, polite, have good manners. At the same time, there is going to be the odd occasion when there's going to be a misunderstanding, and really what we're not getting is a true representation of who that person or the business is on the very first impression. You need to look deeper, because sometimes that first impression is fabulous, but when you look deeper into a company culture, there may be some serious problems within that organization that may be damaging the reputation of that company. Somebody may be polite initially when you first meet and greet them, but then underneath, when you get to know them, there may be a temper, there may be management issues as far as their emotions go. So again, it is all about taking the time to listen, learn, understand, get to know somebody, find out what their needs are, and how you can build the relationship.
Wow.
That for a mouthful.
It's great, because as you were talking, I was also reflecting back, and I'm sure that you will remember this, Deborah, way back, in fact, there was a book, and I just can't remember the exact title, but it was something about how to make the first impression in 30 seconds, or, you know, and then they would teach us that how our eyes would, you know, meet eye to eye, and then we have to make sure and have polished shoes because how the eye flows, and, you know, we had to have that facade, that first impression, and that was, I think, back like in the 70s, wasn't it? And so what I'm hearing all of a sudden, what you're saying, you know, that's okay. But the most important thing is to build that relationship.
Yes, it's more important is the great lasting impression. Let me give you an example of sort of the misunderstanding of a first impression. And this is a classic example that I give in my seminars and workshops. You may have a gentleman walking into the room that you've never met before. He's tall, he's good looking, very well dressed, very well groomed. He's very articulate when he starts to speak, and in fact, in the initial conversations, he's very intelligent. And he turns out to have a law degree. He's a lawyer. But what happens is when you get to know this person, it's Ted Bundy, the serial killer.
Whoa.
Yes. That's really what I want people to understand, is that in most cases, the first impressions, because they are 98% of the time wrong, we are not seeing who the real person is. And I see this over and over again in business, where people try to build themselves up and create this illusion that they're bigger than they are in business. You might have somebody who's driving a Lamborghini, for instance, or is wearing a very expensive suit or a Rolex watch, and really the business is based on fraud, or the business is you know, based on misinformation, or there's a temper involved, or the business is not as large as they appear to be. And I've heard this used by other people. They say, wow, this person really is ballsy. I wish I could be ballsy just like them. But what happens is you're not getting an authentic person there.
Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't, it's interesting what you're saying is that we're wrong 98% of the time. Gosh, that's a high percentage.
Tremendously high. Tremendously high. And when you really look at people, this is, you know, a lot of this research that I've gone through has stemmed from 15 years of working in law enforcement, you know, 3 years working in a federal penitentiary for men, doing federal time, 2 years plus a day, all the way to life, you know, for murder and serious offenses. And then working with immigration, with cultures from all around the world, everything from criminals all the way up to business people, refugee claimants, judges, ambassadors, from different countries. And what I have found is that in most cases, people will lie about certain circumstances. They won't always tell the truth. They'll embellish what's going on around them. For example, the typical thing is in business, you might say, how are you today? And the other person will say, I'm great. How are you? Whereas really, they're not great. There could be some problems in the office. There could be a fight with a spouse. There could be some financial difficulties. So we're not actually seeing the real person. Now, it doesn't mean that we have to see everything that's going on in that person's life. What is critical is that we're seeing an accurate representation of the character of that particular person. So we want to look for sound values and good character when we're dealing with a person, because we want to make sure that we're working with people that are loyal, committed, have integrity, and that are trustworthy.
Wow, that is really fascinating stuff, Deborah. I'm just wondering if you're familiar with the work of Gavin DeBecker and his book, The Gift of Fear. Anyway, he talks about giving people trust a little bit at a time, just doling it out and seeing how well they do. And then you only give them more trust if they behave, you know, consistently as you go.
It is that as a person, you want to behave according to the person that you want to be. And we really need to give a lot of care and attention to the type of person that we want to become as human beings, which is a person of good character. And we have that portrayed in our business. So if there are authors out there that are building their business as consultants and speakers, they have, of course, they're writing about something that they are expert in and have a great amount of knowledge in. And part of this is they're going to be developing relationships with potential clients in seminars and workshops and in any networking events. And that is a relationship that's built on integrity and trust. So that has to be exemplified in every form of behavior when you're communicating, whether it be by phone, telephone, letter, email, all forms of communication in person. It really has to be based on a consistent form of good character.
Great. I wonder if you could expound a little bit on that term you used, found values. I find this that kind of an interesting concept.
The values, when for example, when I'm doing a makeover on a client, which is very similar to what you would see on Extreme Makeover, only minus the surgery, What Not to Wear, Style by Jury. When I'm conducting a makeover and I'm looking at who the person is and I'm creating an image for them, I'm looking first at their core values. Now, most people don't assess their values. They've never done that in their life. They may have an idea of some of the things that are important to them, the values or characteristics that are important to them. But most people have never really taken the time to avidly, directly assess their values. And this becomes important because how we make our decisions in life is based on those values. So when I'm dressing somebody, I want them to have a good understanding of their core values. We go through an exercise for that. We understand what their goals are in their life and in their business. And the goals help me to dress that person for where they are now and for where they want to go in their life personally and professionally. And that's reflected in an awareness of first impressions. That's one of the things that I teach them is I want you to be aware of first impressions. People judge on the first impressions. They're not always accurate when they judge you. You're not always accurate when you judge them. So I want to make sure that any author or speaker or consultant is dressing professionally, dressing as if they're successful, portraying an accurate image that really is in line with their target market client. So, for example, if somebody is dressing in a suit, but they're working with people that are in construction and manufacturing, that may not go over very well. There's too much of a divider between sort of the clothing, the level of dress, the grooming aspects. So we need to tone the dress down to be able to be consistent with that target market. And I also want them to create an image that is really intentional and purposeful. A lot of people really don't think a lot about what it is that they're wearing when they get up in the morning and they get dressed and who they're going to meet during the day and how is their dress and their grooming, male or female, how is that going to affect the communication and the interaction between the people that they're meeting during the day.
Wow, that's a real eye-opener. Let's move on a little bit and maybe you can explain the difference between charisma and stage presence, and is it something you're born with or something that you learn?
You know, I really think that it is a learned process, and a lot of it depends on what the person's level of confidence is and self-esteem to begin with. I think once I'm working with a client who is a speaker or a consultant, and they're working with seminars on stage as a keynote speaker or doing a full-day workshop, it really is getting the client to the point where they fully trust their knowledge and their experience, and they have an ability to connect with the audience, each and every audience member. If you've got a very large audience of several hundred people, several thousand people, you're not going to connect with every single person, and you don't want to necessarily do that. You will connect with the majority of people that are there. And the stage presence is your ability to hold the audience's attention, your ability to connect with that audience and to be able to read the audience, to be able to read the emotions of the audience, to give them useful information. And as a keynote speaker, as an author, you really want to know, who is your audience? What kind of information are they there to hear and learn about? And how do you easily connect with them? So if you are a person that is confident, you have great self-esteem, and you are at ease on the stage, you can create higher levels of confidence and self-esteem simply by the communication that you have with your audience, if there's interaction, or simply by the words that you're using. You can make the audience feel more relaxed and comfortable. And probably as most speakers are aware, very professional speakers, is you want to drive your audience to either laughter or tears or both. You want to create a lot of emotion within your audience. So that stage presence is your ability to hold your audience's attention as long as possible for the entire presentation. Now, the charisma is what I would view as the character that of that person coming out in a very large way and in a big way. You have to be able to throw your energy and your character from the audience right back to the stage and then back again to the audience. So you have to be, in essence, a big, large presence on that stage. You have to be able to connect with the audience as a whole and project your energy out towards the audience. And it could be a couple of hundred people, it could be a couple of thousand people out in the audience. But you have to be able to connect with your audience and get them to interact with you and get them to understand what it is that you're saying, and you want to control your audience. So the more charisma you have, in essence, you're a leader on stage. And with that presence that you've got, you're creating an atmosphere where the audience will follow you. They'll by their eyes, they'll follow you across the stage. If you say to your audience, stand up, the entire audience, which could be several hundred people, several thousand people, will stand up and follow you. That's charisma. If you ask the audience to do something and they don't respond, you know that you don't have that charisma.
Wow, that's a great explanation. Now, I was wondering, when actors go from stage to screen, they have to change the way that they address the audience. Is there a similar sort of thing when you're going from, you know, speaking at a podium to being on television?
I would think that the podium and the television is, it's a more personal environment when you're on screen and a more personal environment when you're on TV, because there's a close-up camera that can move in, and therefore understanding the emotions that you have and how that's projected with facial expression and body language, you may only need to make subtle changes in eye movements or eyebrow movements or lips. Gestures with your hands and your face and your body, subtle movements on TV and screen, whereas you have to make them a little bit larger and more projected on stage to reach the audience. And same thing with a podium. If you're working at a podium and there is no television camera to project you up onto a large screen, then you have to be a little bit more animated in your approach and how you deal with people. But again, with television and with a large screen sort of movie production with actors, is those changes in facial expression and body language only have to be very subtle. It could just be just a glance sideways, and people will see it and experience that in the audience.
Deborah, one thing is I'm just knowing that a lot of authors are very introverted, and they're nervous. They have never spoken to a group of people. They're just, you know, tongue-tied. And many of them would rather die than talk in front of an audience. But yet, on the other hand, you know, as a self-promoter of a book, they really need to be out there and giving that presence, giving that first impression, a lasting impression from that. So do you have any specific pointers for these people that are so introverted?
Now, there's two different sort of thoughts. You will get the speaker who later writes the book, or you could start with the author who writes the book first and then becomes a speaker. I think both skills are critically important to drive your business forward. If you want a great business image, you want to develop that expert status and grow your company, basically get noticed, known, and remembered, as my tagline is, you need to develop both skills. They have to both be strong. Now, often authors will use a ghostwriter. Of course, they're all having a book edited anyways, at least by one or two editors. But to get over that fear of speaking in public, that is a practice component. That is something that must be practiced over and over again. It's a learned skill. It's not something that we're necessarily born with, although you will have some that will naturally be the ham and they'll love to be in front of an audience, and you'll find, you know, young children that put on plays and they act in front of their parents and friends and family members. That's sort of a natural sort of gift. But anyone can develop the gift of speaking well in public. It's a learned process. Even though I loved the whole idea of wanting to speak in public, when I first started, of course, my knees were knocking and they were shaking. But eventually, as I learned my topic and I understood how well I knew my area of expertise and that the audience predominantly was interested in learning what I had to give, and they were interested in hearing what I had to say, once I trusted that, then it made it a lot easier to go in front of an audience and to be able to communicate with them. So again, it's a learned process. I usually recommend it be done with video cameras. You're videotaping yourself. You can see yourself speaking in front of an audience. And then it can easily be dissected. The process can be dissected apart to identify what it is that you have to change. You might have a little bit of a nervous switch with your hands. You may be, you know, carrying something in your hands constantly. You may want to have a tendency to grip the podium if you're standing behind the podium. So there's lots of techniques that can be done to relax the body and to move forward. But essentially, one of the best ways of practicing is to stand in front of the mirror and pretend that you're communicating to an audience, and you can see yourself in the mirror, how you gesture, how you stand, how you move forward, and have a large full-length mirror to be able to practice a speech. Now, there is a speaker in Vancouver, Peter Legg, who's a very well-known speaker, member of CAPS, the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers, and NSA. And Peter Legg practices his speeches at least 100 times before he delivers them on stage. There's a lot to be said for that. He's superb at what it is that he does. And most of the professionals, like Patricia Fripp and Les Brown, all these people are practicing their keynote presentations, their opening, their closings, connecting with the audience. They're making the whole process as natural as possible. And the more you move through this in a practice motion, just like dressing, once you practice dressing and grooming yourself, it becomes natural to do over and over and over again. It's no different than getting a haircut. And the very first time you're styling it, it's very difficult. You don't know how to work with a curling iron or the blow dryer, or you don't know how to style it. But once you've worked with it a few times, it becomes easier and easier. And then we don't have to give a whole lot of thought to it. It becomes a very natural process to be able to connect with the audience.
You know, Deborah, you had mentioned Les Brown, and knowing of Les Brown and where he came from, and supposedly at the beginning when he was a child was labeled as retarded, and now he is a keynote motivational speaker that travels the world. And so it's interesting to know that where, you know, that there isn't such a thing that you can't learn to speak and do presentations. And also I want to add to that that, you know, there's Toastmasters also.
Absolutely. Toastmasters is brilliant. It is an excellent resource to be able to practice. They practice the storytelling. They practice eliminating the ums and ahs. They practice comedy. There's a variety of different exercises that they work with and the tools within that. The key is to get out and speak as frequently as possible. If you're a new author and speaking is new for you, go to networking events. So the very first thing that you want to start with is if you go to networking events that have a round table, they will request that you do a 60-second introduction. For example, BNI, Business Network International, is very popular worldwide as a networking event, and they offer those at their networking groups. You can go as a guest, and practicing that 60-second introduction will give you even 60 seconds of perfecting a way of connecting with your audience, telling them who you are, what you do, and what you're looking for, or how it how you can make it easier to get referrals. The same sort of process happens when you're on stage speaking. It is making that connection with the audience, sharing your information, and then telling the audience how they can get more information, sharing, of course, what it is that you offer in terms of service, products, selling, you know, at the back of the room. Those skills become very important. They're critical. It's part of the process of marketing yourself.
Really good points, really good points. And I just want to kind of switch into dressing. And, you know, at one time, and we were just so much more formal, and it was important to be dressed and be well-groomed. And I know it still is, but our society has been changing sort of to anything goes. I mean, we can go to the symphony or the opera, and, you know, you're all dressed up, and somebody on one side of you is sitting there with all their diamonds and sequences and everything. On the other side, there's somebody sitting there with cutoffs and flip-flops. And, you know, so there isn't, we just don't seem to have a baseline anymore. But yet what I'm hearing you say, the importance of it. So I'd like you to address that.
I am still a big proponent of the suit is really critical for a business environment. I believe that it's really critical when you walk into a networking event to dress professionally. If you are representing your business in any environment that you walk into, you need to dress professionally. And basically, it comes from people when they are looking around the room and they're scanning. If they are looking for a product and a service, and they're looking to connect with someone to make that purchase, we want to do business with somebody who's successful. So the first thing that we're looking at is that professional dress. They don't have to be in a suit every single time. They just have to be clean, polished, well-groomed. And, I mean, you can look professional in a pair of jeans if it's put together with the right accessories, the belt, everything's finished off and well-groomed and pressed, and you've got a sports jacket on, or if it's a gentleman, you know, you've got an open-collar shirt. If everything looks well-polished and clean, you're physically well-groomed, facial hair, the shoes, everything is put together nicely and coordinated, we think, okay, this person's got it together. And that's the first impression initially, is does this person have it together? Now, that professional dress will take you a long way, but now you have to be consistent within your business and how you communicate with people, how you explain your business, how you pass the business cards, how you offer services, set your pricing, follow through with the service. That level of professionalism has to be there every step of the way. So writing the book is one thing. Being prepared to market the book is something entirely different. So authors will go through the process of writing the book. They'll actually get it published, whether it's self-published or through a publisher. But marketing the book, being prepared to go out there and talk about the book, talk about the products and services that are affiliated with that book, is something entirely different. Most businesses know very little about the marketing component. We're now inundated with lots of people on the internet, online and offline, that are teaching us about marketing and how critical it is. But that perhaps is the missing piece that most authors are lacking, is that ability to market themselves. So it's not just simply sending out the newsletters and the emails and the postcards, making the phone calls and the follow-up. It is your whole presence and how that's reflected in your company and how you connect with your audience.
You know, that is so well said. That whole presence is not about just about giving business card or sending out postcards. And I just want to take a little side track, because you were talking about, you know, the polished look. I was thinking, well, so much for Casual Friday, where, you know, people go with sloppy jeans and T-shirts and whatever graphics are on the T-shirts, and it's okay to be show up that way for a business. So
that Friday, the Casual Fridays has done more damage to company.
Yep.
It reduces productivity significantly. It increases profanity. It increases complaints within companies. It reduces revenue from a company. It just has done more damage to the economy and to the presence, the professional presence that a company is trying to exemplify, than anything that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right about that. I have a question about the role of language. I noticed that you consider that to be one of the important aspects. Can you talk a little bit more specifically about that.
Well, I think it's not that you have to have a master's degree or PhD to be able to communicate well. I think what it is from a language standpoint, it's an ability to ask the right questions of your audience, to ask the right questions of your clients, to really get a thorough understanding of who they are, what it is that they're looking for, the results that they want, and then you as an individual, as the service provider, you've got the expertise as an author, you're providing information that will solve the problems of that client. If you don't have an ability to communicate that well in your initial interaction with that person, by phone or in person, if you don't have an ability to follow up with and build the relationship in a positive way with that person, your clients are going to drop off and you're going to lose business. You're not going to be able to get the sale to begin with. So in the words of Dr. Phil, he says, you're either contributing to a relationship or you're contaminating a relationship. And I think that is such an important point to bring up, because in conversation, people can make mistakes, they can criticize other people, they can be insulting, they can say rude things to you. If you respond in kind to those individuals, that diminishes who you are and diminishes your professionalism in the eyes of other people that could be watching or listening. It is so important that a person be clear on who they are as a person and maintain always professionalism and good character. So this isn't about just putting on an act. This is about becoming this kind, considerate, compassionate human being that has a genuine interest in wanting to help other people, in wanting to develop other people, in wanting to build relationships and connections, build strategic alliances, joint ventures. When you become this type of a person, you then become this attractive person that other people want to connect with because you are successful and they want to be connected to you. They think, wow, this person's professional. They're polished. They're serious about their business. You know what? I need to be serious about mine, but I think I need to connect with this person and I want to build a relationship with them. I can learn something from them. So by not being a professional person, not demonstrating good language skills, being able to build relationships with people with the use of language. For example, it could be a simple conversation that says, you know, I didn't quite understand what you were saying. Tell me more. I want to hear more about what it is that you have to say. I want to get a better understanding of what you do in your business, what you're looking for, the types of clients that you're wanting to be connected with. What kinds of results do you want to have? The misnomer here is that the language is all about the big words that we're going to use. It's all about just simply understanding the other person and having them understand you. But more importantly, it's about asking the right questions so you get the right answers so that you know how to make that sale as an author. You know how to get the keynote engagement. You know how to close the sale at the back of the room.
You know, these have been such important points, and I know that you are often referring to the business. And a lot of times authors don't realize that once they become the author and have the book published, it becomes a business, because then the next step is that they are marketing and they are wanting to sell the book. And so it automatically becomes a business. And so I'm really glad that you were focusing on that.
The business aspect is critical. People think mm-hmm. the business card is the lead generation tool. The book is the lead generation tool. It's just a little more expensive. But yeah. The book can be utilized to send a book to a CEO of a large company. The book can get a consulting contract that could be worth tens of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars if it's approached in the right manner.
So, Deborah, tell us your website address.
The website address is aboutfaceimage.com, about, A-B-O-U-T, face, F-A-C-E, image.com. Or DeborahReynolds.com, which is D-E-B-O-R-A-H. Reynolds is R-E-Y-N-O-L-D-S.com.
Great. And I'm on, let's see, where is it, aboutimage.com, and I see that you have a free special report. Kickstart your business image, 9 keys to get you noticed, known, and remembered. Just tell us a little bit what's in that free report.
This is a great report. It's about 32 pages long. It's an excerpt from my soon-to-be-released book. It covers the importance of defining image and how image is reflected in success. It is how other people see you. It's being aware of first impressions and that it's not always accurate in first impressions. It's covering things like reputation, listening to your instincts, building relationships and connections with other people. There's lots of great tips in there, and I encourage the audience to download that free report. I also have a monthly newsletter that goes out called Maximum Impact. You'll get great value out of that as well. And on my site, there's also two wonderful blogs. One is Style Sense, and the other is on business. And on the speaker page of the website, the audience will also have an opportunity to listen to a 45-minute keynote presentation as well as a little bit of a value added there.
That's great. There's a lot of value. And again, listeners, it is about image. Pardon me, aboutfaceimage.com, aboutfaceimage.com. And also, you do virtual makeovers, which is kind of an interesting thing because people can actually have a makeover with you without it being physically in your presence, which is a little different.
Absolutely. This is an opportunity for someone that may not be able to afford a full makeover face-to-face with an image consultant, but really wants to make that connection and get that really honest feedback about their overall grooming and appearance. So it's done with a series of photographs that are sent to me. We then book a telephone time to have a conversation to talk about everything from hair, grooming, facial hair if it's men, the makeup application, the face shape, what would work well in terms of glasses and collars, what particular outfits from dressy casual to casual to business and evening wear pieces, how the clothing fits and coordinates on the body, what colors are suitable for them. So they get lots of information. It gives them a one-time-only opportunity for $4.97 to have a conversation with me and to get some honest feedback with that. But I'd love to be able to offer your author access members something special. And certainly if any of the audience is listening and they want to participate in the virtual makeover, they get a special offer at $4.47 for the virtual makeover. Plus, they're going to get a value-added bonus of an extensive grooming checklist.
Wow. That's great. That's great. Okay, so listeners, it's aboutfaceimage.com. Again, Deborah, thank you so much. This has been really good because this is the first time we've actually talked about anything like this, and yet it's one of the most important things to be there and give that lasting impression so that the potential reading audience will remember you as an author.
Well, Irene and Victor, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Deborah. And you've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We'll be back next time when our topic will be writing for and reaching the international market, and our special guest will be Maria Allen. You can learn more about all of our guests on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you about tonight's show. Please send us your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson in Austin, Texas, saying good night.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.